The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With me is Aisin O'Rourke, podcaster and media lecturer, and Eoin O'Brien, Sinn Féin TD and spokesperson for housing, local government and heritage. Much to discuss in the news today. We'll start off with a Sinn Féin related story. This is that, Aisin O'Rourke, that Brian Stanley is fighting to retain the seat that was once a Sinn Féin seat but will now be independent, and saying that he has been effectively egregiously traduced by the party.
He is indeed. And it's, look, it's no surprise that he's decided to run as an independent. I'm from what was Laois Offaly is now Laois and Offaly independently. I'm from County Offaly. I know he's very, very well liked in the constituency, and he will get votes now from people who wouldn't have voted for Sinn Féin previously, because they feel that he's a hard worker in the Dáil, that he did a good job as chairperson of the Public Accounts Committee. So it's going to be very, very interesting. I was looking at the stats there before we came on. He topped the poll in 2020. He got 23.99% of the vote. We were talking before we came on air. Laois Offaly is going to be very interesting this time around, because you've got two separate constituencies now between the two counties. So it's
just sit in that mic a bit if you would, Aisin, not to cut across you.
It's the constituency itself now being split. You've got it's going to be particularly interesting. So you've got Brian Stanley is running as an independent in Laois, probably the most well-known across the two counties. Offaly itself, fairly unknown from the candidates, with the exception of the incumbent as Carol Nolan. You're going to get people now who will support him because they feel he's been treated badly. From a communications perspective, the whole thing has been a mess for Sinn Féin. And agree with who, you know, and everybody takes their own right to their opinion on it. But I just think it's going to be very, very interesting. And I would never, you know, people are saying now today it's an uphill battle. I don't think it is from.
Well, to separate the two, let's look at the politics of it, Eoin, in one second. So the first part of it, the suggestion that he has been mistreated, he is quoted as suggesting that Sinn Féin effectively put information pertaining to his personal circumstances in the public domain, and that was a terrible thing to do.
Look, first of all, any organisation, when there are complaints made against members of the organisation, has procedures. We follow those procedures to the letter of the rule book. And Mary Lou has made that kind of clear. And look, Brian has taken the decision he's taken. From our point of view now, the focus is actually on the election. We have selection convention next week. Nominations, I think, close tomorrow. And really our focus is about trying to retain the seat for Sinn Féin in that constituency. People will
is
always
the focus
have
retaining the seat, or is the focus making sure Brian Stanley doesn't?
No, for us, we're going into a general election to try and win the maximum number of seats. There are no Sinn Féin seats. There are no seats that belong to anybody. It's the voters who will ultimately decide. But we want to make sure, notwithstanding the fact that Brian, who obviously is a former colleague and a long-standing TD, we make a good selection and then we run the best and most positive campaign, because whoever our candidate selected is, they're not going to be talking about Brian Stanley during the election campaign. They're going to be talking about housing, about healthcare, about childcare, about investment in rural Ireland, because that's ultimately the kind of conversations people want. And look, people will make their own mind up in terms of the details of the issues which Brian is talking about in the newspapers, but our focus is on the election and convincing people if they want change.
And what about
they need
the
to vote for the Sinn Féin candidates?
What about the suggestion that he was treated appallingly? The Mail saying that, questioned on how he thought he had handled, or how he thought she, Mary Lou McDonald, had handled the matter, he said, appallingly, appallingly. When asked if he'd been hurt, he said, "I am resilient. Other people can speak for themselves. I've stuck to the truth." That suggestion that, whatever about the merits of the case on either side, that Sinn Féin should have been more circumspect with the release of information pertaining to him.
Of course, the irony here is people were giving out to Sinn Féin for allegedly not releasing information and trying to cover stuff up. It's obviously a very difficult balance to strike. But in fairness to Mary Lou, when she went into the Dáil and outlined in as much detail as she could answers to the questions that the media and politicians were demanding, I think she got the balance right.
Do you think there will be an element of sympathy for him in the local constituency?
Absolutely. I do. And I think, like, when you look at how it has been handled, you've got an investigation that's led by members of the party. And I think this will be a lesson. And I think other political parties need to be looking at this closely. And it's one thing to say that the Sinn Féin rule book has been applied correctly. And you know, if it has, it has. Does that stand up to 2024 political standards? Like, surely an independent adjudicator should be brought into scenarios like this. Even from a perspectives on this, you to have an investigation led by internal members of any organisation is never going to have the view as being as transparent as having an independent adjudicator brought in.
Although I wonder, do any of the parties currently have a system wherein it is an independent who does it?
And that's the point. If any other party were in this situation, would their procedures stack up? And I think political parties need to be looking at their rule books and their way of doing things and to see, does it actually marry up to the standards that we now have as a society, the standards that we expect from the political classes?
It won't be long till we know what the political impact of it all is, because the election is... Are you betting 29th on? Is that where your money's going?
Yeah, like, it's looking increasingly likely that the dissolution will be Thursday or Friday of next week, from everything we're hearing, and that sets you up then for Friday the 29th of November.
Do you have a preference? Would you rather it went until February? Would you rather it was November?
For me, and I've been saying this consistently for the last year and a half, the sooner the better. Like, we're out on the doors. I was out in Tally yesterday. I'll be out in Clondalkin today. So he just needs to name the date, and then people need to get on with deciding who they want to run the country for the next 5 years.
And we're starting to see elements of the promises emerging. Front page of the Independent today. Fianna Fáil targets Fine Gael with inheritance tax vow. And what this is saying is that Fianna Fáil wants to increase the threshold for tax-free inheriting up from 335,000 to 400,000. In other words, if your parent pops their clogs, at the moment, if they give you more than 335, you pay tax on it. That would raise to 40,000. I would have thought, and that is the kind of giveaway that will appeal very nicely to their core vote.
Well, the two interesting things about this story, first of all, of course, it's one of those fake battles, because in fact it was Simon Harris last summer who first raised the issue around changing the thresholds, and then Fianna Fáil got on board. But I think what it really tells you, of course, is where these people's priorities are. Rather than focusing, for example, on people who are really struggling to pay the bills, people who really need assistance, they're talking about raising thresholds that are only going to impact on a very, very small number of people coming into huge amounts of wealth. In fact, the inheritance tax thresholds that are already there are enormously generous. And in fact, in our alternative budget, we would have actually raised the rate of tax by 3% from 33 to 36%.
But now, if they think... Surely people would say, when you have an average house price of 400,000 euro in Dublin, that means that if you inherit the family home, you end up having to pay inheritance tax on it. If you are running a farm, and with the price of agricultural land, you inherit the farm, which is the family concern, you'll end up having to pay inheritance tax. So all that you are doing is saying principal primary residences and family businesses and farms can go to the next generation.
So first of all, the average house price at the moment is about 360,000 euros. So it's marginally above the
much higher Dublin
house
though, isn't it?
Threshold. In parts of Dublin, absolutely. But also, typically, you would have two, three or four people. So when my mother passed away, for example, three of us inherited the house. We came into very considerable sums of money and didn't pay any tax. But also, if you look at the way inheritance tax works, you'd pay no tax at all on the first, whatever the current threshold is, 333,000. And you then only pay a relatively modest amount of tax on the difference. The effective rate of tax when you come into a very substantial amount of money is very, very small. And what's that money used for? Well, of course, that money should be used for really important things like education, healthcare, policing, etc. So it's one of those issues where, I mean, again, the number of people who will pay inheritance tax is small. The amount of tax they pay is relatively marginal. But if Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael think that this is the battle they want to have, when the vast majority of working people out there, for example, are crippled with USC, are crippled with the highest energy costs in Europe, are crippled with the highest rents and house prices, I think that shows you where their focus is. It's not on regular working people. It's on a small marginal battle at the fringes and the most wealthy fringes of our society. And that's a battle I'm more than happy to have with them all day long.
Is it a battle that is easy for them to win, though, Aisling, in the sense that whether or not you are likely to benefit from the windfall of inheritance tax, there is something about inheritance tax that seems to get almost everybody's back up?
Look, I actually think we think we're not going to be affected by it, because none of us wants to think about death, let's be honest about it. I did my own will during the summer, and my goddaughter is not my goddaughter by blood. But at some point, whenever the inevitable happens, I'd like to be able to, if there's nobody else, hand it over to her so that she at least gets a good college education. That's, you know, and I hope it's not for many years yet. But like that, in that case, even though she to me is immediate family, by law she's not. I can only hand over 20,000 under the new regime. And I think what we forget, because we don't like talking about it, because in our society talking about these very real, very important issues is seen as being morbid instead of actually something that's going to affect all of us, we're uneducated about it. And actually we get, and the problem that I see is the people who are not financially prepared are the ones that are going to suffer the most when these taxes come in, because they don't have the preparation to pay the tax, even if they do get a windfall. I think there needs to be a broader conversation around it.
On the point of that, does it not create, if you have an inheritance tax threshold of €400,000, does it not intrinsically create intergenerational wealth and reconfirm their being an elite? If you're able to say, you start off when your parents die, with €400,000 in your back pocket, and somebody else may have zero, and when you die, you can pass that on and pass that on and pass that on. Is that not a guaranteed way to create a two-tier society?
Of course it is. But I think you're not able, I think the way that it's set up and it's established, like look at modern Irish families and the way it's divided up now, and the fact that we can't really choose who's the main beneficiary of it, because if they're not related by DNA or if there's not a marriage certificate, you're in hot water. And I think it's, we need to have a much broader conversation instead of this, you know, trying to score points off each other. People are going to get caught by this and they're not prepared by it, and then they end up in debt. And that's what my concern around it is.
Well, how do they end up in debt? You're still, I mean, if you pay tax on €400,000, even if you pay it at the top rate, you're still pocketing €200,000.
Yeah, but if you're not prepared, you don't have that in your bank account, the tax for it. Even
if
it's small
amount. If it is a principal primary residence, you sell the house and then half of it goes into your back pocket.
Yeah, but if you're inheriting the family home and you are not prepared, you're going to end up in hot water. You're going to have solicitor's bills, you're going to have tax bills. And let's be honest about it, we're very keen to own our properties. We're not very keen to sell them on. And I think it's a difficult conversation for people to
have. Does this go to something at the centre of this own, that sense that we are, it is, quotes, the families, and therefore the government shouldn't be. Already we're getting texts saying things like, Sweden, Norway, Canada, Australia have already abolished inheritance tax. We're an outlier. Another, I'm a sheep farmer that works 7 days a week for barely more than the dole. There should be no inheritance tax, full stop. Inheritance tax, another, is a despicable, unjust tax that favours married people and punishes people with single people and people with no children.
Absolutely.
The overwhelming majority of people pay no inheritance tax when one of their parents dies and the property is handed on to the children. Clearly, there are issues in terms of people who don't have children and what they do and what their options are, because the thresholds are different. But the vast majority of people don't pay this. And even if you take that €400,000 home, over €300,000 they pay no tax on. Then they only pay currently 33% on the remaining less than 100,000. It's a relatively small amount of tax. You're absolutely right. I mean, I've had conversations with people where people think all of a sudden the state is going to come in and gobble up the family home. And actually, when you talk to people and explain how this tax actually operates in real terms, people go, oh, God, I didn't realise that. So, of course, as with all cases, there are some outliers and some anomalies. But for the overwhelming majority of people, when their parents pass away and the family home has passed them, they either pay no tax at all or very marginal rate of tax.
And do you share the ideological concern of it creating intergenerational wealth? I mean, if you're a parent of four children and you have, whatever, 1.6 million to give, that means that effectively that vast wealth can transfer straight to the next generation with no...
Yeah, so the origin of these types of taxes is actually to try and break up excessive concentrations of wealth among the very, very, very wealthy, not the ordinary working farmer or the ordinary working man or woman on the street. But also, let's remember, what do we do with this money? Well, if you have a government that's doing its job properly, it's paying for teachers, it's paying for guards, it's ensuring people are able to access good quality affordable homes or good quality childcare. So this isn't money that just disappears. This is money then that should be reinvested into good quality public services.
But I can almost hear people texting, but the tax has already been paid.
Exactly.
People had to earn this money before it got passed
on. They did, but again, I use my own case. And as it happened, because there were three of us, we didn't have to pay any tax. We came into very considerable sums of money. I did nothing to earn that money. Right, other than as you say, the gift of DNA.
Did.
My mother worked very hard for it
and put tax on the way.
But what I'm saying is, because of the way the thresholds are, I came into a very considerable sum of money and didn't have to pay any tax. The vast majority of the actual cost of the family home isn't taxed under the current proposals. There is no justification for raising the thresholds as either Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are proposing.
While we're talking money, let's look at money on an institutional scale. Reports that RTE is, the reform is being delayed. Actually, in the front page of the Irish Daily Mail, and Craig Hughes, their political editor, reporting that the coalition has been accused of stalling signing off on politically sensitive redundancy packages. This is because, as I understand it, the RTE has put them in a situation where the government now has to say, mm-hmm. Yes, we accept that you will do redundancies, which means the political fallout of giving balls of money to people in RTE now lies at the government's door rather than at RTE store?
Oh, it's very clever, really. But I also find it kind of amusing, to be honest, that the government is deliberately stalling on these things. Like, at the end of the day, we don't do anything efficiently or quickly in this country when it comes to legislation or situations like this. And there, you know, the government can't move through these things as quickly as you or I would like, because you have to be very, very careful that nobody takes a lawsuit over it at the end of the day.
But are they just looking at the election saying, of all the things, lads, wait till the election is passed and deal with that then?
Well, sure, look, we can suggest that, of course. Do we know it for a fact? I don't think so. Look, it's been around now. I was looking at it there. November 23 is when it was placed on the minister's desk, or in around thereabouts. We're at the 12-month mark now. It is clearly too slow. Like, we all thought there was going to be some kind of reform of the TV licence structure in this calendar year. That's clearly, everything's been kicked down the road. And it is frustrating. No matter what side of it you're on, the fact that this, we're still waiting on reform in how public service broadcasting is being funded in this country.
It's also interesting to see it because, to some extent, this is a pilot programme for a bigger issue. They're quoted, a spokeswoman for RTE is quoted saying, RTE remains committed to launching a limited voluntary exit programme targeting up to 40 roles in 2024. Before moving to the wider voluntary exit programme referred to in RTE's 5-year strategy, RTE is currently awaiting the required approvals from the department. So if 40 is a challenge, what happens when that number triples, quadruples, which it is likely to?
There's also an unnamed RTE source in that article which says that there are many dead weights waiting around to be handed these lovely redundancy packages. In my experience, if I've ever considered a dead weight in a company, they tend to be the ones that don't move on quickly or easily either, because they're savvy enough not to. So it's all very interesting.
Lots of reaction to the issue of inheritance tax. We will come back to that in a minute, because within the papers there is a piece analysing the memoir of the former housing minister Owen Murphy, and it finishes, Owen Murphy should never have been appointed by minister as Minister for Housing. His naivete, lack of political experience, shallow political base and even shallower understanding of housing policy made his failure inevitable. But in having the courage to lay bare his time in office, he has done future ministers a service in alerting them to the considerable challenges holding such an office entails. They're the words of Owen O'Brien. Owen, it is not often that an opposition spokesperson gets the Christmas prezzy of having the previous minister say he failed in office.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just to say, it is a very good book. Political memoirs can often be very dull. They can just be former politicians and ministers kind of refighting the battles of the past to try and justify their actions or inactions in office. It is very rare that you get a politician and former minister being very, very open and honest, both about their internal political battles with their own colleagues, battles with the civil service, and then the personal impact that that has on them. So as political memoirs,
were you surprised by the extent of the personal impact? Because he cites running through London at dawn, weeping and being utterly lost.
I'm probably surprised by the frankness of it, because it's clear at the end of 2018 he has an emotional breakdown, and he talks about that in great detail. He also underwent some very personal tragedies as well, which he details in the book. So I think there is an openness to it, which I think a lot of people will be surprised by. The book is all about Owen. Right? It is all very much about himself. And I think some of the most revealing parts of the book are unintentionally revealing. I don't think he meant to expose parts of either himself or the particular political world he's in such dark form. But if you're interested to know what time was like during his period in office, this book tells us a lot we didn't know. There's also really important political things in here.
Well, can I ask about the politics of it? Because one of the things that he is notable for through the book is his self-deprecating humility in respect of what he achieved in office. He, by his own description, says that he lost control of the delivery of housing policy and failed as a housing minister. From your perspective, given that you man-marked him at the time and continue to hold that brief, is that not a great gift to you on the run-up to an election? To have a departing minister say, we made a hames of our own policies?
Well, I think everybody knows that. I mean, there is nobody out there, if you stop on the street and say, was Owen Murphy a successful minister for housing, they would say yes. And if they were, you know, there are their carrying members.
Government would argue we are getting there. We're starting to hit the targets. We're starting to increase the number of houses being delivered.
What's really interesting, though, for example, is when Owen Murphy was appointed by Leo Varadkar as Minister for Housing, Leo said he should go and shake things up. He should bring new ideas. Owen went and he met everybody, myself included, right, looking for different ways of trying to fix the problems, because it was clear Simon Coveney's Rebuilding Ireland plan wasn't working. Owen then brings to a meeting of, and he details this in the book, of the Attorney General, the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, and the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, a set of very, very radical proposals, some of which were very good in my view, some of which were very bad, but very radical shake-up. And at that meeting, he described it in the book as brutal. He was basically told, you know what, we're not going to make any changes. You're stuck with the policy that you have. And for me, what that tells you is, particularly with an issue as big as housing, unless it is the government's number one priority, unless from your Taoiseach and your finance minister and your AG down to your Minister for Housing, unless there is a single agreed approach to do things differently, then you won't be able to transform anything. And I think one of the things that is very, very evident in terms of the current government, as well as the one that Owen was part of, is housing isn't the priority. It's not getting the level of attention that's required. And that's why house prices are rising, rents are rising, homelessness is rising, and every single social and affordable housing target is being missed by the minister.
It does then, of
and
course,
the homes aren't even affordable.
It raises the question that I know I have raised you a number of times. Why then does that not translate in what we're seeing in the polls? If that's the case, why do we not see that continued level of Sinn Féin support that there was 18 months ago?
Sure, I think, and I've talked about this before, I do think over the last year we weren't quick enough to come out and show in great detail exactly how we would fix things. Maybe I was spending too much time criticising and highlighting the government's failures and not enough time setting out our alternative. I think we've started to turn that around. I think the publication, for example, of our alternative housing plan, not unlike David Cullinan's health plan and Claire Curran's childcare plan, are going to be key battlegrounds in this election. And keep in mind, about 20% of voters are undecided. They're only going to make up their minds in the final days of the campaign. It's all to play for.
Now, not to talk about you in the third party in your presence, but I will nonetheless. Aisling, in reading Owen's review of Owen Murphy's book, the bit that I quoted at the end is the most negative. But within the review, things are said like, of the three ministers for housing that I have shadowed, Murphy was the most genuine. While I fundamentally disagreed with the policies he sought to implement, I always got the sense that he believed in what he was doing and thought it would make things better. And he goes on to credit him. He says, it is a story of excessive ambition, rapid ascent and catastrophic fall. It's the story of a failure, which to the author's great credit, he himself admits. Are you surprised that Owen O'Brien resisted the urge to drive a stake through his heart when it was given there in the opportunity was provided by the Irish Times?
No, and I think we like to think that in the Dáil, it's all argy-bargy and the performance goes on and they all hate each other behind closed doors. But at the end of the day, we're lucky in this country in the way our democracy works in that actually there is a good collegiate atmosphere and politicians behind closed doors are just like the rest of us and they like to be liked and they're decent enough to each other for the most part. I do, though, wonder what the overall aim with the launch of the book is from Owen Murphy's perspective, as in he's been largely forgotten from the public domain with the greatest level of respect to the man. Why now? Why in the run-up to an election? What's the goal? What's the end goal here? And I find it very interesting timing that he's brought it out at this particular point in time. I don't think it's handing a goal to the opposition, but I do think it will cause difficulty for Fine Gael in the coming weeks for the few that will be aware of the book.
Well, those questions can be answered directly by Owen Murphy because he's going to be joining Kieran Cudahy live in studio on The Hard Shoulder on Thursday to discuss running from office in detail and undoubtedly to respond to the reviews that it has been receiving. In relation to inheritance tax, please help. I am single in my 60s. How can it be fair that I can't leave my house to my niece and nephew? They will have to sell it to pay tax. It upsets me so much. Anton, many homes in Dublin are worth over 800 grand. Let's be frank. The lower the inheritance tax, the less likely the children of Dublin residents will be able to afford to retain the family home. At a minimum, the family home should be excluded from the tax net, regardless of value. It does seem to be scratching people where they itch.
Some people, but I have to say, I'm going to be out canvassing later on today. I'll be canvassing for the next 4 weeks. The overwhelming majority of people aren't going to be talking to me about inheritance tax. They're going to be talking about putting food on the table, heating the home and paying the rent or the mortgage. And they're the issues that I think the government's parties should be talking about and not this issue, which again, only a very, very small number of people pay and they pay a very, very marginal amount of the amount of inheritance that they take in.
Owen O'Brien, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Midwest and spokesperson for Housing, Local Government and Heritage. Thank you very much. Likewise, thank you to Aisling O'Rourke, podcaster and media lecturer. And I should say, if you want to read Owen O'Brien's review of Owen Murphy's book, it is in the Irish Times book reviews section within the magazine. And if you want to hear more from Aisling O'Rourke, you can, of course, get her Cut Through the Noise podcast, which has been shortlisted for Best News and Current Affairs podcast in the 2024 Irish Pod Awards.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.